obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
Hi, my name's Bryson. And I gave her my opening line because that is an important thing, and more importantly for me is that I behave a lot like an alcoholic. I believe that my life I have been affected by alcoholism. In this case, it was other people's alcoholism, but when we read Understanding Ourselves in our literature, all the traits are the same. We talk about obsession and denial and anger and guilt, and all the alcoholics that I know, you know, and from reading the big book myself, you know, those are the things alcoholics deal with. Obsession of the mind. They talk about that a lot. For me, obsessed with other people's lives, obsessed with other people's drinking, obsessed with trying to control the world, you know, and maintain that illusion of control. And for me, that illusion of control, I jokingly say, I wish I was only trying to manage my drinking. I'm trying to manage the world, and that's the nature of my disease. And so it's really funny, you know, I'm always, when I'm asked to speak, I don't really try to plan anything. But then there's always that moment of terror where I'm like, what am I going to say? These people brought me down here, you know, and I always have one prayer, which is, you know, it's just, let me tell the truth. And let me say whatever I'm supposed to say right now, right here. And I like to say that out loud because that's, you know, that's what I'm going to try to do today. And my whole life, thanks to the 12 steps, has become a process of just trying to do what my higher power wants me to do instead of what I want to do. Because what I want to do is driven by fear, and it's driven by ego, it's driven by all these things. And so instead, you know, I do the thing that, you know, that I feel like my higher power wants me to do. So, you know, it's a much easier life. Feels good to be here and, you know, and think, okay, this is what, you know, this is what my higher power wants for me right now. I came in the program about 10 years ago. I came in once and then left and came back, and I'll talk a little bit about that. The main thing I want to say about that is that when I came back, no one shamed me for going away for a while. And that was a really powerful thing for me because my whole life had been driven by shame and by not being good enough and not feeling I was doing it right. And Al-Anon letting me just sort of, you know, do whatever I was doing and have my own process through this program helped a lot. You know, they talk about the adherence to the unenforceable. And I have to attribute, you know, it's beautiful to see the traditions and beautiful to see 12-step programs work because I can't imagine alcoholics and people affected by alcoholism hanging together in any group for this long any other way, you know, other than setting aside all of the things and just following those traditions. And that's a beautiful thing for me to see. And also, when I speak at Al-Anon and AA meetings, I like to mention that, you know, our third tradition says the only requirement for membership is a problem of alcoholism in a relative or friend. And for me, that pretty much qualifies the world for Al-Anon, which is... Because for me, I didn't just have alcoholics in my family, didn't just have alcoholics in my relationships, I have them in my job, I have them in the world. I know that some were driving on the freeway with me yesterday, clearly, on the way here. It's around me. And every one of them bothers me. Every one of them is victimizing me in that moment. That person is actively deciding to not allow me into that lane. And I know that it's because I did something wrong or have somehow wronged them or whatever it is. That's really how my disease works, is that focus on myself, that everyone is focused on me. And that's the thing, you know. It really lets you off the hook when you go to speak, because if you realize that you guys are all just thinking about your own story right now. You're not thinking about mine, which is nice. So I ended up, I came in this program just... you know, absolutely wrecked. I came in, you know, I like to say that, you know, God had to take everything away from me for me to get this, you know, and that wasn't completely true, but I do identify as a low bottom Al-Anon. And for me, I also want to say that all of those situations and all of those circumstances that happened were my fault. They were things that I did, choices that I made. And I'm able to forgive myself because I was affected by this disease. And so for me, you know, I can allow myself off the hook for those things I did. But I do want to say that I was a really mean Al-Anon, and I was really vindictive. You know, I'm 5'8 and about 135 pounds soaking wet, and if I told you that didn't affect me and throughout my life, I'd be wrong. You know, I believed that everyone was out to get me and that people were going to hurt me, and so early on I developed, you know, ways to compensate and to fight back, and I couldn't do it physically, but I could do it verbally and mentally, and I hurt people, and I learned to hurt people really badly. And that's something that a big part of my amends to the world is to try to become a more gentle person, try to become more loving, try not to judge, because those are my big character defects that really, really got me. And I was really rough on alcoholics. You know, another tradition for today is, you know, we're supposed to, you know, give love and understanding to alcoholic relatives. And that's a one that I was not very good at, not very good at all. I grew up down south, and you know, I always joke that, you know, I was the son of a bull rider, and my family treated me with all the love and care you would expect of rodeo cowboys. And at the same time, it's really important to say that there wasn't physical abuse in my story. There wasn't physical abuse. By California standards, there might have been, but not by Arkansas standards. But the important thing for me when I came in here was that I heard people's stories, and I always felt like, you know, I wasn't good enough even with my story, even with my damage wasn't good enough. And so I always like to say that to people, because for me, I minimize the things that happened to me, and I minimize the damage that happened to me as I was growing up. And I don't really know what gave me these ideas. I don't know who did it or how, and that's not important. You know, the 12 steps are not about figuring out. There's no figure out in the 12 steps. You just do them, you know. And I always say, and I mention it, especially in this room, you know, the 12 steps are made for people who were in jail, who were in rehab, people who were in dire straits, who needed help quick. And for me, that was a beautiful thing, because I'm a thinker. I overthink everything. I'm too smart for my own good often. And the 12 steps said, no, you just do this. And we don't know why, and I'm not here to figure out how or why they work, but they did. Also, I don't know what caused this disease to affect me. I identify, my home group is an adult child of alcoholics focused Al-Anon group, and I don't have alcoholism in my direct family that I know of, but I compare it to a situation where if you went to the doctor and you were sick and they gave you penicillin and you got better, they could infer that you had an infection. For me, I worked this program, I worked the steps, I go to meetings, and I got better, and my life got better. So I don't need to understand or point blame at who maybe was the alcoholic or what they did or how they did. For me, when I worked the program, my life got better, and that's all that mattered to me. That's the thing that is important to me today, is not what happens out here, but what happens in here. And so, but I grew up with some ideas that were wrong, And I've come to understand that they are symptoms of this disease. So for me, never felt good enough. Never felt like I knew what was going on or was right at all. I was always apologizing for everything. Everything was my fault. I took on, as they say, you know, we take on the hurts and the fears of the alcoholic. I took on all of the blame and the guilt of you know, anything that happened around. I felt responsible for everything. And so I also felt, you know, very small and very powerless. And my reaction to that was not to have faith and find a higher power. My reaction to that was to try to manage everything to find some safety. And I saw that control, management, and control in my life, throughout my life. As I got older, I found myself, you know, I found that if I could surround myself with lower companions, people didn't look at me so much. I was doing great if I was surrounded by just a circus of just chaotic people. And that's what I found, you know? I mean, alcoholics are fun. Alcoholics are exciting. And for me, you know, also I used that parade to, one, I had no self-esteem. So for me, a way of getting other esteem was to help someone else. And most of the time I was helping people who didn't want my help. And that's a rough thing to do for you and the other person. A great thing I heard in a meeting one time, somebody said, unsolicited advice is a form of abuse. And that's an amazing thing for me to hear. And another thing that I heard, which is, if you give someone more than they think they deserve, they will punish you for it. And that's another one in my life that's central. And that's one that I also do. I had to learn to deserve love. I had to learn to accept love. And if you tried to give me something I didn't think I deserved, I would punish you for it. I would push back and kick back as hard as I could because it was unlovable. This disease left me basically unlovable, unable to receive love, and unable to give it. I thought I was giving love, but I had no idea what love meant. Until I got into this program, I want to say I was surrounded by love my whole life, and I believe that we all are. There are people that love us even when we think we're completely unlovable, but I was not able to see it or receive it. And this program taught me to recognize and receive love, specifically my sponsor, my home group when I first came in. I tell a story about how this program cracked me. On a Friday night, I would go to this church basement in Burbank, and I would show up, and I felt lowest of low. And I would go in with my head down, and I would sit down, and I remember sitting in that room and crying. I remember that room feeling horrible. But I noticed that after some time passed, that these little old ladies in there would come up and give me a hug. And the men there seemed genuinely happy to see me. And they would say, hey, what are you doing? Whoa. So I would go through this week, and Friday night, the end of the week, I would walk into this room, and people treated me with love and seemed genuinely happy to see me. And you know, the program tricked me because I believe that everyone in the world knows more than me. And these people loved me clearly, and they showed it. And they didn't know me. They didn't know what car I drove. They didn't know what job I did. They had no idea how cool I really was. That's a joke. But that anonymity really, really, really helped me. That anonymity helped me. I could just show up, and I was Bryson, and they loved me. And because I thought that they knew more than me, it conflicted with this idea that I was unlovable and that I was just a complete, you know, low piece of crap. And so I had to finally accept that I might be lovable. I might. And then working with a sponsor and doing the steps, you go through the fourth step, you know, which I want to say, and I say this all the time, I want to say this to anybody who may not have worked the steps in here. For me, the fourth step was not opening a closet where things are going to fall on me. The fourth step is a backpack, and I was carrying that stuff around my whole life. I had it on my back. I just didn't know it. So for me, the fourth step was not opening a door where things fell on me. It was opening a backpack and taking things out, and my sponsor helped me lighten that load. And when we were done with five, and he turned to me, this big, huge, rough man turned to me and said, I'm proud of you, and I love you. And I had told him every horrible thing that I thought that made me unlovable, and it made me less than. And here was this person who said, good job, I'm proud of you, I love you. It transformed me, because I didn't have to have secrets anymore. I didn't have them. I shared them with another human being, with my higher power. And so you get this intense sense of, you have nothing on me. If you work these steps and you work the 10th step, the world has nothing on you. They're not going to find anything out on you that isn't already out there. And it's freedom. It gives me chills thinking about it right now. It's a powerful thing. I walk through this world and nobody has anything on me. You know, I haven't done all my 9th step amends, but I am working on them, and I am clear with God and with the world. And that's a powerful experience as a man, especially as a man who spent his life building up things that if people knew, they surely wouldn't love him. So I had these people that I was honest with. I had this sponsor that I have a sponsor that I don't care what he thinks of me. And I offer that up to Al-Anon because Al-Anon's, I find, you know, certainly for me and I think for a lot of people, Al-Anon's really worried about what people think a lot of times. For me, it was all about that show to the outside world because they couldn't know how horrible it was over here inside my yard. And so, you know, for me, I had to have a sponsor that I could, you know, I always say I could call my sponsor and tell him I killed a drifter. And he would just be like, well, how'd that make you feel? That's really the thing that I needed. I needed a guy that was not my friend. I needed a guy that I wasn't going to see all the time. And people think that's really strange. You go, wait, did you see your sponsor earlier? No. But my sponsor is a guy that I can call and say anything to. And I have no need to be okay in his eyes. I have no need to be cool in his eyes. I can just be Bryson and go, yeah, this is what I did. Yes, I got in an argument with so-and-so. Yes, I did this. Yes, I'm trying to manage and control things at my job. This is what I'm doing. And that was powerful for me. Anonymity was one of the most amazing things in the world. I would go to these meetings. I remember I went to a meeting out in the valley in Reseda, like way out where I didn't know anybody. And it was like four guys and me, and we just kept going around and sharing for like an hour. And it was great because they didn't know me, and I could just go. I was miserable at the time and just say whatever was happening because I couldn't do that with my friends. My friends had to get the show. It took me a long time before a friend could say, how you doing? I could be like, phew, bad. You know, it took years for me to be able to do that. It took years to, you know, to be like, what's going on? I don't know. Oh, my business is doing badly. You know what? I mean, the honesty in this world is you know, sometimes shocks people. But these rooms taught me, you know, that it was okay. And so I grew up and I surrounded myself with these chaotic people, and that was great because it kept me busy. It gave me a source of other esteem because I was doing something for somebody always. And I made sure that whoever I was with needed a lot of help, whether they wanted it and knew it or not. And God, I was mean to people, man. There's still people that I'm trying to heal relationships with. And there's some people that I just have to accept that I never will. And that's another thing, part of my story. There are people in my life that are gone. There are good friends that are gone because their lives, the way they chew their lives, no longer suit me, and that's okay, and I had to be okay with that. It was rough. And there's people that just think I'm an absolute ass, and they may never know anything else. And I have to sit with that. You know, that's part of accepting myself, is that I created a lot of damage, and maybe over the years I can straighten that out. But I just remember being so mean and so rough. When I did my fourth step, you know, there's just types of people. Another spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't done a fourth step, you're fine, you're okay. That's what you find out at the end. That's the dirty secret of the fourth step. You're okay, you're fine. But there were just, it got to the point where they were just people. They were just types. Oh, that is the guy that I pushed way out of his comfort zone in life to get what I wanted. Oh, instead of risking choosing the right person to do that with. And that was a thing for me that happened over and over and over in my life, is that it didn't matter if you were on board for the ride. You were coming with me, and we were going to do this, and that was it. And I see that with alcoholics all the time. I did that with alcoholics. I have somebody who's clearly, you know, and I realize now that was the way that I made sure that I did not get what I wanted. I didn't think I deserved something good. So I would make sure that I collected a team of people who were destined to fail miserably. And then I could feel like I had someone to blame when I failed, and I could be mad at them and lord over them. You know, it's funny, I drink like once a year or something. So I know I'm not an alcoholic. I drink like once a year, and now I say I drink only to make sure I don't get self-righteous again. Because I quit drinking when I was 17 just so I could like talk down to my girlfriend at the time who drank a lot. And I would hold that over alcoholics as if it was, you know, it was a choice. I didn't understand the disease. So for me, it was like, well, I'm not drinking. Why aren't you? And it's like, well, because they have a genetic disease, you know. Mitch Hedberg, a comedian who died of this disease, you know, he says that, you know, addiction is the only disease that people yell at you for having. And it's true. I was that guy yelling at an alcoholic, why can't you do this? And it's like, good Lord, You know, this was a person who couldn't, you know, put their slippers on without smoking a bong load or, you know, or, and here I wanted them to function at a high level. It's part of my grand plan for the universe. And so, so for me, that was, you know, that was really the way I lived my life. And so the way it really manifested itself was in my close relationships with women. I, you know, God love them. I dated a string of just unbelievable, outrageous science projects. I'm sure somewhere some doctor is writing a paper on all that. But wow. And, you know, and something I want to say is that some of those women are fine and have wonderful, you know, lives. Some of them are sober, not through any of my efforts. Sometimes, you know, despite my efforts to the contrary, and some of those women are still out there just lost, and that's okay. I can allow people their lives now, and it doesn't make me happy, but I understand now that my life is going to be okay, no matter, as they say, whether the alcoholic is drinking or not. And so, I jokingly say this, mainly I say this for the men in Al-Anon, because every time I share this, guys come up to me, and someone comes up to me and goes, oh yeah. And so I like to talk a lot about my, you know, I mean, I did actually do some good things, you know, out there. And sometimes, you know, they talk about character defects or just, you know, sometimes assets in overdrive. And so for me, I really did help a lot of people, and I did do some good things out there. And I was always a supporter of the arts. And I was always there to lend a hand and financial assistance to artists. But mostly I supported dancers and people who danced in that kind of art. And but being an Al-Anon, having a little bit of an ego, regular dancers weren't good enough for me, so I had to support exotic dancers. And so that was part of my contribution to the world. So if you own stock in Spearmint Rhino, you can thank me after. But I found a woman who was just, man, unbelievable. Just the perfect storm for me of, like, you know, that just blew up all my character defects and you know, need to rescue and my ego and all of these things. And just the poor thing, man. I was just so mean and controlling and rough. And we just did this crazy death spiral into absolute madness. And it left me just, oh, wow. You know, I used the word pathetic before program for me as a man. I was pathetic. So the day I completely bottomed out, my assistant, God love her, my assistant at the time was an alcoholic and a member of Al-Anon. And she showed up to work to me sitting at my desk in my big black chair, wearing fuzzy slippers and boxer shorts and a wife beater t-shirt, bawling, just crying, a wreck, and just absolutely just destroyed. And she took a piece of paper and wrote down and said, you're going to go find Beverly tonight at this meeting at the Little White Church, and here you go. And so she sent me to this meeting, and I went, and...
To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
You know, I remember one thing. I remember I was so obsessed with work and with this woman and with everything. I remember just how uncomfortable it was to turn my phone off. Like the fear of just turning that phone off for an hour and a half, I couldn't do it. And on her, it was like, well, she might check in. And from my side of work, well, something might happen at work. There was no God. There's no God in that. Like, if you can't turn your phone off for an hour and a half and trust that the world's going to work out, you have no faith, right? That's pretty much showing that you think, one, I thought I was running the whole world, right? Like, the planes wouldn't fly if this phone went off. And two, like, wow, that God wouldn't, my higher power wouldn't take care of me for that long. And so I just remember that. I always like to share that because I can remember. And now I remember, you know, now it's like, fine, you know, fine. it's going to be okay. This is going to be all right. And so, but I remember going in there, and it was like little old ladies and you know, guys who were, you know, probably the age I am now. And I felt like I completely couldn't relate. But something, you know, some things they said made a lot of sense. And at that time, I was still thinking about sense. I was still worried about everything being logical and working out. And I listened, and I came back, and I started coming back. And I share this part, too, because I want you to know that this was my experience. It's not my recommendation. Here's how my program worked. I didn't have a sponsor. I would go to one meeting a week, that meeting. I wouldn't talk to anybody, and I would leave the second I could leave. And didn't have any commitments. I would read a little bit of literature, you know, but wouldn't call anybody, wasn't working the steps. And then I started dating someone in the room, which I cannot recommend less. And, of course, that went as, you know, as here's the thing about dating in the rooms. The odds are good, but the goods are odd. So for me, tackling the 13th step right off the bat, I don't know, it's weird. Al-Anon didn't work for me. I don't understand. But so I went away for about a year. And then, man, that's like the worst thing in the world. Just hard to say. Like, I've done a lot of work on loving myself, but I can't think of a time to be least proud of than, like, and me in a control freak, right? Control freak with, like, a little bit of Al-Anon so I could tell everyone else how they ought to be doing that. Just a nightmare. And I remember, you know, I went to the desert with a bunch of friends of mine. And, you know, I always say, like, I say this because it shows the level of unavailability that I was attracted to. I always say this line because I want people to understand that I was not going to let my life work out, right? If I chose the right thing, it might work out, and I did not deserve the thing that worked out. I didn't deserve anything, you know? Somebody said to me one time at a men's meeting afterwards, we're having fellowship, and the guy said, we said something about what we deserve. And he said, what do you think you deserve? And I turned to him, I remember I was probably a year or two in program, I turned to him and I said, I think I deserve to push away all love and money and all good things and to die naked and alone in the gutter. And that's exactly what I think I deserve. Left to my own devices, in the grips of this disease, that's where I think that I belong. And that's what I get. I get nothing. Nothing. And so every day I have to work to allow God to just let me live my life at an appropriate level for me. You know, God rewards me so much more than I would ever allow myself to be rewarded. And that's my challenge, oftentimes, showing up and allowing that. So I go to the desert with my gay, sober friend, and when we came home, you know, she wasn't sober. She was certainly not acting gay, and she was clearly no longer just my friend. And so we started about a 6-week to 2-year relationship, depending on who you speak to and at what moment. And the important thing that was interesting is that having gone to Al-Anon for a few months, right? 6 months in Al-Anon, and they say, find out more about alcoholism, right? That suggestion is not like, that's like they throw that one in. That one should be in bold type at the beginning when you walk in. Find out more about alcoholism. I bought this woman after 8 years of sobriety. I bought her a shot of tequila thinking it was a great idea. And she experimented with some controlled drinking, was the quote she used. And my experience is that there is no such thing as controlled drinking for an alcoholic. I can say that today, honestly. So 6 weeks later, she's crazy out of her mind. I am topping her in the crazy Olympics, and I scared her. And that's an important thing to say. Here she was, drinking and doing drugs, and that thing where they say, well, you pick up right where you left off. You know, they talk about that in AA all the time. Like, she and I both agree that's exactly true. It just all comes back, and with a vengeance. And so the point that I make was that my behavior was so effed up that I was scaring her. And so she said, you are empty. You have a hole inside you. You're trying to fill with me and money and sex and love and everything, and nothing's going to fill it but God. And I don't know why, but I listened to her and I heard it. I think because I just knew how broken I was and how wrong I was. And I had enough Al-Anon in me to go, wow, I have to find some God. And I remember talking to a buddy of mine and saying, you know, I think I'm going to go back to that Tuesday night meeting. And that takes me back to where I told you. I show up to that meeting, and everybody's like, business as usual. They do the meeting, no big deal. Bryson's here, no parade, no weirdness. They didn't announce it as part of the program. And an old-timer came up to me. I have huge issues with men. This program taught me to be a man, and it taught me to relate to other men and to be intimate with other men, which is a key in my story for being intimate and having solid relationships with women, was to come to fellowship and trust men. And I didn't trust men at all. And this guy walked up, big, tall, old dude, white hair, and he says, how you been? And he didn't say, where you been, or what's wrong with you, or are you idiot, or anything. He just said, how you been? And I said, good, but not good enough. And I was lying. My life was a wreck. But he just smiled, and he said, keep coming back. And that's all he said to me. And that was a beautiful turning point in my life, because it was like, okay, man, you can mess up here. You can mess up here, you know? That led me to actually step into the program. I got a sponsor. I started doing service. Speaking of messing up here, I've made horrible coffee. I've made the worst coffee in Al-Anon. I've been like vague with the treasury. Like, there's probably 35 cents somewhere out there that I owe a meeting. Nobody fired me. I remember this is a great story, man, about how weird, you know, how I victimized I was, right? I had this meeting. Kay was here yesterday, I believe, so I'm so bummed I didn't get to participate in this whole thing, but I went to a meeting in LA in the Valley, and Monday night, it was my home group for a long, long time, and Kay and all these women were there, and it was like black belt, crazy kung fu Al-Anon meeting, and I mean, the ladies would dress up and they would go to dinner beforehand and stuff, and I was so resented them all because it was so, I felt it was so cliquish. I should tell that story too, but I mentioned that too. So I went to this meeting and everybody was really put together and they had great careers and they had great lives and they all drove nice cars and they were all so together, and I just hated them. I hated them. And they were all kind of weird and standoffish to me. Well, one, they were weird and standoffish because the meeting was full of beautiful young women and they were protective of those women, and for good reason. I was a predator at that time. I was a wreck. You don't want anyone you love in a relationship with me. I was a nightmare. So one, thank you to those ladies for being that way. And you know, two, they still loved me. They just weren't going to trust me. Huge Al-Anon lesson right there, right? I love you, but I'm not turning my back on you. So that was great. And then as I heard their stories, they had these horrific stories. These women had had horrible, horrible things happen to them. And yet, you know what? They still showed up. They were happy. Some of them had succeeded to really high levels and lived amazing lives. Some of them had active alcoholism in their houses, and they showed up every week, and they were like, fine. And I learned from them, and they taught me. And over time, as they got to know me, and importantly, as I showed up in the program, I became accepted, you know, and that was a beautiful, beautiful thing for me. But I was the coffee guy. I remember being the snack lady at that meeting with a friend of mine. And I was always like, apparently at this meeting, also, by the way, Al-Anon taught me to ask and be clear with what I need and what I want, but that doesn't mean that Al-Anons are always clear with what they need or want. So I didn't really know that people wanted you to show up 30 minutes early because then the coffee was hot, you know, or the water was hot 10 minutes before the meeting. So I would consistently show up 20 minutes before the meeting, which is enough time to make the coffee hot for the start of the meeting, which now thinking about it, they were right. That's pointless because you can't get coffee before the meeting. So anyway, these ladies, it was always one or another nice lady, never a guy. I don't know, the guys were always late to this meeting, I guess, but always some lady who would show up and she would fill the hot water for me. Now, listen to that statement for a minute. She would fill the hot water for me. What a wonderful thing to do. Be of service. Do something good for somebody. Nothing could have enraged me more than that lady filling that water for me. Why? Because in my mind, she was saying, well, you're an F up and you're not here on time, and let me just do this so that it gets done correctly. I don't think that that's exactly what that woman meant by doing the water for me, but that shows you how twisted this disease made my mind. Such a huge lesson, though, because about halfway through that commitment, after seething mad at the beginning of every meeting, finally it hit me that maybe she just wants hot water, and maybe that's okay, and maybe that's not an indictment of your performing this service. She just didn't want to. And by the way, she never said anything to me, which is great. She just did it herself. Another amazing Al-Anon thing. There was no shame other than the shame I took on. Ah, my head is wrong. I might have some ideas that are not correct. Ah, wow. And today, mostly, you can do something nice for me, and I can just see it as something nice. Still hard. Happened last night. My wife tried to do something nice for me, and I actually said to her, that feels like you're da-da-da-da-da. And she just looked at me like I was crazy and was like, I'm actually just trying to do something nice. And I was wrong. Oh, yeah. Maybe she just loves me. Maybe she sees me having a hard time and wants to do something nice for me. You know, just like that lady making the water at the meeting. So this program has taught me things without me realizing it. You know, and it's beautiful because I didn't want to be taught anything. I came in here just trying to fix alcoholics. I came in here just trying to tell me how that I could make these crazy people do something right. And this has spilled over to my whole life. My whole life, you know. Crazy thing happened, so I do these steps, and I have this sponsor. And so I learned this unbelievable lesson that I could share everything bad. I could say who I am. I could say that the little old lady's enraging me at the meeting, and I could still be loved. Somebody could still love me. I could walk into a room full of strangers and know that we could relate and that we're going to be a little bit different, but we're going to have some things in common. And that taught me. I got to be, you know, intimate with men. I got to feel safe. I got to build a God. This is a big thing. I'd find a God of my own understanding that was bigger than my fear. And that's a big one, I think, for me. You know, I talk about this. You know, it hit me one day that I'm scared of a lot of things. And as a kid, I had just intense fear. And I've learned to sort of condition myself out of fear, to experience things and get over your fears. You know, I still have some that I just can't get over, but a lot of irrational fears. And I thought, you know, it hit me one time that so often we have really violent reaction to fear, you know. So for me, I thought of like a tarantula. You know, tarantulas don't bite you. They don't actually hurt you. They look horrible. They look terrifying. And if you're scared of spiders, it just freaks you out. You talk to people like, ah, you know, that's the reaction. And so for me, it was like, well, if I was standing here right here and someone put a tarantula on my hand and I saw it, I would freak out and I might hit my friend Allison here, you know. I might swing and slap somebody. And that was my life, reacting with fear and hitting and hurting people all around me. And what I wanted to learn to do was to understand that, to have faith that that was not going to bite me, and to calmly reach over and set it on the ground and let that be my reaction, to let me not swing and flip out, but actually manage my reaction through faith, you know, through understanding, and then to be able to live my life in a much calmer and safer for people around me. So often, I hurt people out of my own fear and my reaction to something. And my reaction was I'm going to say this, almost always worse than the actual thing that was happening. An alcoholic would do something to me, but my reaction was what really created the huge problem. Because in the end of the day, I was a grown man. I was living my life. I'm a grown man. Like, you know, very little, you know, actually wrecks my life. But I was letting it wreck my life. So for me, I had to learn to look at that spider, take a deep breath and go, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, that's okay. You know, how important is it? It's a slogan. How important is it? You know? Well, getting the tarantula off your hand's not that important. You know, take a minute. It's okay. It's not going to bite you. And for me, that was the deal. So a big part of me becoming a man and learning to live in this world was to have a God bigger than my fear, to become spiritually bigger so that I didn't have to react and swing on people. You know, I have a guy that I used to hire bouncers. Well, I used to work in bars, and we'd hire bouncers, and they would always make me hire these huge bouncers. And the manager, the owner of the place one time said, here's why you hire the big guy. He's like, the big guy who's 6'5", 350 pounds versus the guy who's maybe 200 pounds and 6 foot tall. They're like, that 6 foot tall guy, someone will swing on him because they think they can take him. And so he will always get into trouble and have to defend himself. The guy who's 6'5", 350 pounds, he knows he's not going to get hurt. He doesn't have to hurt anyone. And I saw that over and over. The guy was big enough, somebody would swing on him, he would grab them, he would walk them to the door, you know, at arm's length where they couldn't reach him, and he would send them on their way, and nobody got hurt. And I understood that I wanted to become that big, so that I understood spiritually nobody was going to hurt me, so that I could calmly walk them out of my way, out of my life, without having to beat on them, without having to swing on them. And that's my whole practice in this program, is to become spiritually big enough so that I don't have to hurt people with my reactions. Another dirty trick that Al-Anon played on me is that once I understood that I had this sponsor who loved me and he knew everything bad, and I had sponsees that loved me and I could be intimate with, and then I had a room full of people, and then I learned to be safe, you know, safe for women. I learned to see women as, you know, sisters, as members of the fellowship, and not as potential dates. You know, when I learned to walk through this world without looking at what I could get from somebody else and just show up and be of service and be myself. Once I learned that, then, you know, there's an interesting thing that happens, because you can actually be honest with somebody that you're dating. So you can go on a date with somebody, you know, and say, this is who I am. And one of the biggest amends to women in my life was I had never allowed any of the women that I had been in a relationship with to actually know if they would like me or not, because I wouldn't actually share who I was truthfully. So they were always in love with something that I presented to them, because I could not. Because if they knew me, if they really knew me, they would not love me. There's no way somebody could love me if you actually knew everything I'd done and who I was. And so in this program, I was able to start dating people and be honest, you know, be honest. So that from the beginning, not 6 months in, not a year, and not, you know, 3 years or 5 years in, which I've had that situation, people find out who you are, to allow myself to be who I am. And, you know, so I had an experience of being in a relationship with someone and having them know exactly who I am. And the trick that played on me was that I could no longer say, well, if she knew me, she wouldn't be here. You know, she knows me. She knew me completely, and she stayed. And she said, I accept you and I love you as you are. And I was able to accept her and love her as she is, you know. So about 6 months ago, I got married, which is a miracle. Yeah, seriously, like, yay. That was not going to happen, you know, for someone like me. I didn't have the skills. And I would have made a horrible husband. My wife and I say that had we met, you know, 5 years earlier, it would have been a great weekend. And, you know, and I like to say that I won the Al-Anon lotto. I married a woman who's in 5 12-step programs. And and at the same time, luckily, I got her after many years in all of them, which is great. So, you know, and we go to meetings together, but we also have a great life apart. She's not here today because this is for me, and this is for me to come and share with you guys. And that's a beautiful thing. And I don't have to worry about where she is or what she is, and she doesn't worry for me. We have, you know, lives separately and together, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful. It would not have happened without, you know, the daily reprieve that comes from the 12 steps, from my sponsor, and from coming to rooms like this. So thank you for allowing me to be here today. Thanks a lot.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.